This is AgriFutures On Air, brought to you by AgriFutures Australia, driving innovation in Australian agriculture.
Hello and welcome to the AgriFutures On Air podcast. My name is Steve Honor, and this week we take a close look at a fruitful partnership between farmer and startup. Our regular EvokeAg contributor Judy Kennedy speaks with Dan Winson, the founder and CEO of Zetify, a wireless networking startup, and Andrew Dumerix, a broadacre cropping farmer based outside Wagga Wagga in New South Wales. It's a partnership that has evolved and provided a win-win situation for both Dan and Andrew. Dan has been able to test and trial his products on Andrew's farm, learning along the way. And Andrew has been able to solve his initial on-farm connectivity issues he had been experiencing, along with being able to adopt new technologies as a result of the reliable connectivity. Dan and Andrew discuss their journey in working together and the importance of connectivity on-farm, and how it is one important piece of the puzzle in helping to drive agri-tech adoption. Dan and Andrew discuss their importance in working together and the importance of connectivity on farm, and how it is one important piece of the puzzle in helping to drive agri-tech adoption. Here's Dan as he explains how the pair first met.
So I first met Andrew actually at an event that was held at his farm here. Who was it, Andrew? The Agronomist Association of some sort?
Yeah, that's right. The Agronomist, National Agronomists, get together every several years, and part of the tour was by our place, and
I got invited along to present on what we were doing in Zetify around connectivity, because it's obviously a topic of great interest to agronomists, to make sure they can get the data they need from their customers. And I came along, but it wasn't until another year after that, once John Lucas had joined our team. So John Lucas is our product manager, and he said, "I know the best farmer anywhere near Wagga, and we have to get him set up as our test farm. I'll take you out there." And John brought me out, and I was like, I've been here actually. And yeah. John basically had done work with Andrew 10 years ago on precision agriculture and controlled traffic and all sorts of other cool stuff, which Andrew can tell you about. We realized that it was the same person, and that it would be a really good fit for a test farm for Zetify, and that Andrew's an early adopter and understands the agricultural side of things more than just about anyone, and could give us those insights so that we made sure we built something that actually worked. And thankfully he said yes.
And Dan, at that time, what were you doing with Zetify?
So at that time, we were still working with early adopters and working, doing a lot of government contracts to deliver novel connectivity solutions for areas with poor coverage and poor internet connectivity. And we'd connected probably 40 farms at that point, but we were really trying to develop our own technology and really refine what we needed to take to the mass market, which takes a lot of research and development, and it needs a lot of back and forth, and it was getting quite costly to drive to Condobolin and back. So instead of doing that, we wanted someone close to Wagga.
And what was the reason behind the formation of Zetify?
So Zetify was formed because I'm a network engineer, and I came to realize that there was a massive gap in the market. So there are a lot of really great networking companies out there like Ubiquiti, Cisco, Cradlepoint that have awesome products. I was teaching people how to use those products as a lecturer at Charles Sturt and as a teacher at TAFE New South Wales. And to keep my skills sharp, I was building networks, including for farms, and I was using those other companies' products. And it's not that those products don't work, they work really well, but they're much harder than to build out on a farm than what they need to be. So I set about building new technology to make it easier to do it in a solar-powered setup, to make it easier to do it over longer distances that are needed on farms, to make them more resilient to the conditions on the farm, to make them easier to deploy so that you could use the workforce that's available out there. So we use electricians to do our installs, not network engineers, which keeps the cost down. It just makes it practical for scaling it up because there is this huge gap where telecommunications carriers can't practically provide the coverage that's needed across all the farms. So 2/3 of Australian farms have got poor connectivity, and that's the problem we're setting about solving using new technology.
So Andrew, let's hear where you were at when you first heard from Dan or heard about Zetify. Dan says you were an early adopter. How did your knowledge and awareness and practice of this sort of systems that require connectivity develop? Was that a natural progression from you, for you just looking to increase the technology on farm and take advantage of the systems that are out there?
Yeah, that's right. We'd like to be progressive in our thinking and looking forward to new technologies. And yeah, so when Dan appeared on our doorstep with the offer to use our farm as a test for his product, we're quite keen to give it a go. We have reasonable phone coverage here, but we still have dropouts, and we've been using the internet for our GPS connection for auto steer and running our tractors, and we've been looking for a better connection, and what Dan's come up with is helping us achieve that.
So in terms of auto steer, were you getting signal dropping in and out?
Yes, we do from time to time. It is getting better, but yeah, we're having trouble. You know, even though we're close to town on a Saturday afternoon when everybody's on their phone and using the internet, we were having issues.
And when you say close to town, how far are you from Wagga?
Oh, we're probably 10 km from the nearest base station, Telstra base station, I'd imagine, wouldn't we, Dan?
Yeah, that'd be about right.
Yeah.
So, Dan, how did you and Andrew get together and start working out what to do first?
Well, we just sat down with Andrew and explained all the areas we thought there was market potential and the products we were developing. And we said, look, realistically, we're just going to throw everything out here and see what sticks. You won't use all of what we deploy, but if you use any of it, then that's absolutely fine. And if you think, if you've got suggestions about how we can do things better, we're very open to that as well. So in part for us, it was about having access to somewhere with proximity to the office where we could do our R&D, but what's turned out to be even more valuable has been the insights from Andrew. So on that very first meeting, we did a walk around and he's like, oh, you could put it on the sprayer here and then you could do this and that. And that's really started to inform our product development. And then when we were looking at camera solutions connected to our Wi-Fi network, Andrew made it clear that he really wanted something a bit more portable than what we've got now. And he said about welding up a cage that we now actually use right for installations right across Australia based on Andrew's design. So it really sort of happened organically, I guess. We just sort of, started doing things. And then Andrew was like, well, could it do this? Can it do this? And where we could make it happen, we did.
Yeah, so it's like a lot of these new technologies, you're not quite sure where you'll end up with them. But if you've got that connectivity to, as a starting base, you're only limited by your imagination of what we can do. So, at the moment, we've got cameras set up around our sheds and house just for security. We can view them all the time in the house and anywhere else in the world if need be. So we're using it for that. I can see the opportunities for being connected are endless.
I guess too that it was extremely useful, as Dan alluded to there, to have somebody that you could speak to face to face instead of being expected to import or buy some technology from a company who may send out a sales rep for a visit, but it's not like having your own advisor pretty much on tap and being able to use your joint intelligence to work on these things, as well as the practical nature of the farm to test them.
Yeah, that's correct. It's very useful being able to talk to the creator of a product. If we were having trouble with our old system, or you had to deal with another multinational company, and they all blame each other to why it's not working, whereas for a local company like Dan, you can sort of get to the root of the problem pretty quick.
Definitely, and it's a huge win for us as well. Like in the early stages of any startup, you're really just trying to figure out what's going on, and that's why a lot of the best startups are founded by people that actually serving their own market. Like a farmer starting an ag tech startup makes a lot more sense than a network engineer doing it. But being aware of that, I knew that I had to go out and find farmers and find people that could act as mentors to make sure that I wasn't just building a solution looking for a problem, and instead build products that really do solve a genuine issue. So Andrew's helped us with that, as have other early adopters, but having Andrew so close to Wagga has really helped us do it faster than we could otherwise. So and the big thing for us is that feeds into the product development cycle, which means as we launch new products at scale, we've got most of those teething issues out of the way. We've built something that actually sometimes really simple things, but things that a network engineer might not think of, but a farmer does. They've been solved and built into the product so that it's much closer to what the market really needs.
Tell me about some of those successes, that products that you have developed with the input of Andrew on the farm.
Oh, definitely. Well, the first one would be the portable mast solution. So for a long time, we were struggling to come up with a way to get the elevation needed to send a signal out across a paddock and do that in a way that can be quickly deployed. So Andrew welded up a cage, and basically this, I looked at it and said, this is over-engineered. You don't need it that big. And he's like, do you understand how big cows are and how much they like to scratch up against things? I was like, no, yes. I don't. But I'm willing to listen about it. And he showed me, and every other farmer that's seen it's gone, this is absolutely perfect. We've tweaked it a bit based on making it easier to ship. Andrew's helped us with prototyping it, and now we're looking at building hundreds of these. Without it, like we would still be struggling to dig holes in the ground and pouring concrete and waiting around for it to set and using quick set mixers. We've tried a bunch of different things. You've got a few redundant masts around your property now. Sorry, Andrew.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's just a willingness to try these new things. And in that particular case, it's made Dan's technology portable. Yeah, so you can pick it up, take it down the paddock to monitor livestock, cropping, gateways, or just to bounce the signal further down the paddock.
Yeah, so that's been invaluable.
In a lot of cases, you don't necessarily need that connection or connectivity to that certain part of the paddock all year. If you're following your livestock around or your cropping or security, you can move it around.
Yes, you're mobile.
Yeah.
The other one would be a better understanding that I've developed of the precision agriculture space. So Andrew's farms run with controlled traffic and obviously variable rate and other, not standard, but becoming standard or practices as far as precision agriculture goes. So understanding how those signals can be received by the machinery and the other options for that and how where our space in that could be. So rather than having to send a terrestrial signal over a radio tower, which has a significant investment in infrastructure, being able to provide internet connectivity to the tractor or to the sprayer so that it can actually bring that signal down over a virtual reference station is going to be a big part of our product strategy moving forward for the machinery connectivity. So having Andrew's insights into what that means from a practical point of view has been really useful.
And is this connectivity or this mobility that you're providing through Zetify something that can be replicated in areas that are much more isolated and much better, much less serviced with infrastructure than Andrew's? I'm just thinking of the West, perhaps Western Australia.
Yeah, definitely. So it depends on the size of the property and whether we can get our costs down to where it's practical for a large property. The biggest we've connected is about 30,000 acres, but it was a significant investment to cover that with Wi-Fi. From a backhaul point of view, Andrew is now connected to Starlink, which is the SpaceX internet connectivity solution using low Earth orbit satellites. And while that program's in beta at the moment, not available across all of Australia, it will be available across all of Australia really soon. And we're pumped about that and being able to leverage the $10 billion network that SpaceX are building to provide fast, low latency. Andrew's getting like 200 megabits down sometimes on this thing. It's crazy fast. And that's going to be available in remote places really soon. And then we can take that signal and we can bounce it out across the farm with Wi-Fi out to tractors, out to sheds, out to the workshop, out to the yards, wherever people need it. It's just, doing it on bigger properties. Like, we're not trying to do this on cattle stations right away. Cattle stations will definitely end up using Starlink and they'll probably use us to bounce it out to their sheds and the stockyards. But you can't at the minute with our technology cover a million acre property, but we can do some, up into the tens of thousands of acres, depending on the lay of the land. And we need line of sight, for example. Yeah, there's a lot we can do even in really remote areas by building private long-range networks.
And as you say, SpaceX, I guess you'd expect it to be available in the over the next 12 months?
The indicators are that the next 6 months should see most of Australia lit up. It's available right now in much of southern New South Wales, northern Victoria, which is exciting. So we've been working with customers that are connected to Starlink and using our technology to improve the range of that Wi-Fi network, and also while they're building out that network, improving the reliability with 4G backup as well. So even in very remote areas, we can often get a very good 4G signal by going on top of a silo or a shed, dragging that signal in, and whether that's used as the primary connection or a backup connection for satellite, it's useful to have that reliability.
Andrew, I guess Dan alluded to the cost of effectively these systems that allow you to put into place the latest technology. It's expensive, but it's really become a priority, hasn't it? Because it really, these systems really save you time and money and make your farm operation so much more efficient.
Yeah, that's correct. It does run into, new technology does run into considerable expense at times, but you only got to look at Autosteer. 20 years ago, it was $100,000, and everybody thought it's a great idea, but can't afford that. Now it's nearly every crop in Australia is sown with it, and it's it's affordable. So as more people adopt it, obviously the technology, the price of that drops, but it's the cost savings of being able to monitor livestock remotely. Well, if you go back a step, labour's becoming increasingly harder to obtain. If you can observe your livestock from a distance and see that they're drinking water and doing, haven't been stolen, time savings there soon add up very quickly. And if we want to go forward with precision agriculture and autonomous vehicles, if we just haven't got that reliable connectivity, that's not going to work. A lot of the pieces of the puzzles are there, but it's really the connectivity that's probably the missing point at the moment to make all that work.
Mm. How would you two advise farmers and developers to get together? I mean, yours sounds like a fairly fortuitous connection. Are you going, Dan, what would you say to founders or startups who are looking to connect with farmers? And Andrew, what's your advice as to finding somebody to partner with or to do a bit of troubleshooting on technology before it gets out into the marketplace?
I think there are plenty of farmers out there willing to adopt products that solve problems that actually need solving. So first step is building a version one, a minimum viable product that actually works well enough. So a lot of startups launch their minimum viable product either too early or too late, I guess. You've got to make it valuable enough that it actually does something useful, but you don't have to polish it. It just has to do one thing and do it well, and that one thing needs to be something that people need done, and then start asking people to use it and charge them for it and make sure that they're actually willing to pay for it. Once you've done that, you can actually say, well, these ones are close enough to me, or they've got some insights that could be incredibly valuable. Because Andrew wasn't the first farmer to give us this help. It just happens that he's the one that's in the best position to do it on an ongoing basis. But we had Wally Newman was one of the first that gave us a run. He invested quite substantially in a farm-wide network over in Newdigate, Western Australia, 20 cameras and lots of Wi-Fi covering his property. And he took a chance on us because he saw the value in the technology, and we did all of that remotely. And we wouldn't be here without Wally's early support. Basically, that job gave me the work to figure out what we had to do. Beyond that, there were a dozen other farmers that gave us advice on what we needed to build. I went to field days and took orders, and then just did things that weren't necessarily scalable, but gave me an opportunity to understand what I needed to do to build a scalable company. So just putting yourself out there and saying yes to whatever people are willing to give you a run at initially is fine.
I guess too, from Andrew's point of view, farmers, they drive the technology by giving messages back to companies about what is useful through buying this technology. Andrew, would you say that farmers are keen to make themselves available to test these technologies, or have a natural curiosity about it? Or is it a matter of actually sitting down and making the time because you are time poor by dint of your jobs?
We are time poor, but the reason I took this on is to perhaps free up some time. So that's how I looked at it. But I don't know. There's in a lot of industries, but certainly in agriculture, there are those early adopters of, whether it's this sort of technology growing different crops or different ways of doing business. And I don't know, I think they, the Dans of the world sort of naturally find those people. They seem to naturally find each other because, you know, Dan's looking for, you know, people that's sort of a bit progressive. And, you know, there is that element of growers or farmers in general that are quite keen to try something different and be able to, sometimes it is a little bit frustrating. We've been involved in a few projects over the years where they haven't gone quite to plan and lots of phone calls and, you know, tearing your hair out. Nothing simple in life. You've just got to work at it.
And has there been a lot of interest in the district in your trials?
Yeah, they're starting to. Certainly west of here where coverage is, we don't really have to go too far west, do you, Dan, to be Wagga, to be, you know, what you would consider should have, you know, good mobile coverage, just hasn't got it. So, you know, for a lot of people, it's just, you know, getting a reliable connection and being able to make a phone call. That's sort of, you know, in a lot of cases they can't, you know, the old copper network fixed line sort of seems to be deteriorating over time. You know, it's not being renewed or serviced. So, yeah, just need to be connected. Yeah, the rest of the country is. It's what you quote before, something like 90% of the population's.
Yeah, 99% of the population's got phone coverage, but that leaves, 1% that doesn't.
Yeah,
it's mostly its farmers. So two-thirds of farms don't have good coverage. Yeah.
And that, you know, and they create a lot of wealth that just hasn't got the coverage or the connectivity that they deserve.
That's it. There's probably about 500,000 premises that are currently served by the copper network. ZFI is actually part of a project run by the Commonwealth called the Alternative Voice Services Trial. So we've deployed 50 locations with our technology to give the government a chance to assess whether ZFI's tech could be an alternative to those copper networks for providing voice services. At the same time, it's providing resilient data connectivity to those locations using a combination of Telstra, Optus, NBN, and SpaceX internet via Starlink to deliver connectivity to 50 different locations. So it's that project's showing, I believe, that there are alternatives. And so far, the insights that we're getting from that project are that there's definitely a market for better connectivity to the house, better connectivity out to the sheds and the yards, and, of course, right across the farm as well.
What are your opinions on the main barriers to agri-tech adoption? Is it the connectivity, the lack of connectivity on farms that we've talked about?
I think so. It's one, there's a lot of technology out there, remote diagnostics for machinery. Machinery companies have sort of had that sitting on the shelf for quite a while, and certainly in countries like Australia, they don't support it because we just don't have that connectivity. So, you know, if I've got a tractor broken down in the paddock and they can hook on and see what the problem is before they drive out, at a great expense to say, oh, gee, we need that part, and drive back to town. So, the connectivity is probably one of the main restrictions.
Definitely. Mm. You've got to solve the connectivity problem, but it's with that done, there's still work to be done to make sure that the ag tech providers are delivering something that's of real value. So AutoSteer is the classic example. Yeah. The adoption curve on that was faster than just about anything you've ever seen, and it's because it saves labour. And I think going to full autonomy, we're going to see that. It's happening faster than I would have predicted. Raven's coming out with some really interesting stuff that's market ready. It's not full-blown autonomy as far as robots running your farm, but it's happening in progressive steps now, and connectivity is critical to see that work. The new Case IH gear, so Andrew's primarily a red farm, and we work closely with Case IH on the development of our products as well. And their latest series, the AFS Connect, is all about providing in-cab support, remote firmware updates, lots of really cool high-tech stuff with cameras and things. And a lot of that is dependent on connectivity, which is why a little startup from Wagga has got a chance to work with Case IH, because they want to see the problem solved too.
In most of those tractors work in their areas that just don't have reliable coverage. And as I said before, once that connectivity's there, other things that we don't imagine will just happen. It just does. It just grows.
Definitely.
Yes, I think it's a case of build it and they will come. Once the connectivity is in place, I guess you will see a flush of companies to assist with that, with the adoption.
Definitely. A lot of the technology is already available, but it's just being held back, and we will see new things come to market as well, I'm sure.
Can you flag any of those, Dan, that you think we'll see in the future?
But one of the more obvious ones is video. Everyone likes to be able to see with their own eyes what's actually going on, and being able to do cool things with video, with image analysis, is already starting to happen. So Peartree are doing some pretty cool work around that right now.
So just explain how image analysis works.
I'm certainly not an expert in this space, but the basic idea is that the computer can learn by looking at a photo or a video feed, what's going on, like a gate being open or a gate shut, and it can report on that status. So that's a simple example. So rather than having to have a sensor on the gate reporting to you that it's open or shut, you can just have a camera and you can have an alert based on gate open, gate shut, but at the same time you can see who's opening the gate, which, or who left it open, or whatever else is going on there, which is, from a making a decision point of view and running your business point of view, more useful than just your gate's open, because you don't really know that the sensor's not broken, you don't really know why it's open or whether it's a problem that it's open, or if you being able to actually see what's going on is more useful. So that takes more bandwidth than what you can do over LoRaWAN or what you can do over Cat M1 or narrowband IoT. So having a Wi-Fi connection is a big advantage in that, or having a 4G connection, but the chances of getting 4G into these remote areas is pretty slim. It seems that network's not going to reach the farms, whereas building your own network with Wi-Fi gives you the option to have that extra connectivity.
I was just going to ask Andrew, you must scratch your head sometimes, Andrew, to see the progression of farming over the last 10 years in particular, if you think back to probably your grandfather's days.
Oh, yeah, it's moving very rapidly. I don't even think you only have to think back to my father, or even, I left school and a calculator was pretty flash. So, and that's the other thing is too, that the current generation of coming back home to farms, that sort of 20 to 30 year olds or perhaps a bit older, they've been brought up on this technology, been off to uni or been and worked in other industries and sort of almost come home and expect it to be there, and that could be an issue with perhaps some people not wanting to come back to the land, as it's almost seen to be, you look like you're going backwards, where in fact, it's an industry that's moving forward very fast.
Very fast, yes. We've looked at a couple of the advancements we've seen lately, but what else do you think globally has merit for Australian farmers and farming? And I guess we have to speak about the impact that the global pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic, is having.
Definitely. So not that it hasn't had impacts on farming, but its impact on rural and remote areas is quite an interesting one. The fact that people are now moving to a continued teleworking space, like we're doing this remotely, you're in Melbourne and we're here in Wagga, and
lockdown.
So the importance of having cloud connectivity that's always on and always fast and always working is only increased by people being able to work remotely. But it's interesting to see the positive side of that, of more people being able to choose to leave the city and do their work from wherever they like, as long as they can get that connectivity. That's only going to increase the demand for products like Starlink and hopefully Zettify's technology as well. That's having a big impact. The 5G rollout is changing the way things work as well. So obviously in the cities, 5G is going live. And even 2 years ago, I would have said, don't worry about 5G. If you're in the bush, it's not really relevant to you. But it turns out it is. 5G has been turned on by Telstra using some of the same frequencies as the 3G network. Across 1,200 sites initially, and a lot of those are accessible to people in rural and remote areas. And with the 3G network shutting down, that's going to have a big impact in the years to come as well. The new technology, things like Wi-Fi calling and Wi-Fi SMS, which isn't that new, but its adoption has really increased. So allowing people to make phone calls even without 4G or receive text messages even without 3G or 4G, just by, as long as they've got a Wi-Fi network, that has a big impact on just getting their phone working for those basic functions wherever they are. So yeah, there's a lot of interesting things starting to happen in this space.
Excellent.
Yeah, and I think Dan's technology is, you know, filling in those gaps, and you know, rural Australia deserves to have the same connectivity as the rest of the country. It's just as important. We create just as much wealth, and yeah, it's important.
It is. How important has the startup network been? What sort of benefits do you think it is in having EvokeAg or AgriFutures investing in startups and publicising startups and encouraging people to learn more about investing in new technologies and companies that are pushing that new technology?
EvokeAg has been absolutely critical to Zetify's growth. So the first year we made contact with Case IH, which gave us that relationship to get out there and test our technology on their test farm and understand from a machinery point of view what was needed. And we've continued to work with them. It also introduced us to Auctions Plus, who have been using our equipment and our solutions to deliver the connectivity they need to do their on-farm auctions. And that's really driven our portable connectivity solutions development to make and the R&D around that to make sure that we could actually deliver it. And it's also led to quite a few sales, which has been very handy to help us build that credibility that we are actually a company worth backing for investors and for various government grants that we've received. And of course, also the exposure that we've received from the EvokeAg network and the opportunity to network with growers, with other startups, just to understand our place in that. At last year's EvokeAg, they made a meeting room available for me to meet with Birchip Cropping Group, which led to a project where we fixed a mobile black spot between Birchip and Sea Lake that allowed us to deploy new technology and prove it could work out in the field. And that ongoing relationship with the Birchip Cropping Group's been absolutely critical for us in applying for government grants and having a chance to have independent, respected researchers test our technology and demonstrate that it actually works at scale.
That was Dan Winson and Andrew Jumerics speaking with Judy Kennedy. Thanks for listening today. My name is Steve Honor, and I look forward to talking to you next time. If you're interested in finding out more about ag tech and food innovations that are changing the future of Australian farming, make sure you listen to my weekly podcast on EvokeAg. Until next time, have a great day.